everybody off that bridge except for us. Let's go.
Gold Rush, Alaska, a closer look. It's the KHNS local news. I'm Burn Power. That story and more coming up. It's not quite a done deal yet, but more than 5 acres of tidelands near the Sitka National Historical Park could soon be under the care of the Southeast Alaska Land Trust. The move puts tidelands into conservation status, which comes with special restrictions about what can and can't be done. All of this is happening because of a project at Sitka's Rocky Gutierrez Airport. KCAW's Ed Ronco explains.
The FAA is about to expand the runway at Sitka's airport and add a taxiway. Doing that will push the land further out into the sea, but things live down there, like kelp, and so federal rules say if that area is going to be covered up by the construction, then another area needs to be set aside to make up for it. No net loss is how government officials refer to it. The United States has X amount of wetlands and navigable waterways, and so if some is destroyed, some must be created or preserved elsewhere. The part that's going to be preserved is about 5 acres of tidelands between Crescent Harbor and Sitka National Historical Park. The deal to set that land aside has been in the works for more than 4 years and is now in its final stages. The Southeast Alaska Land Trust will pay the city about $240,000 for what's called a conservation easement, the right, basically, to protect the land from damage. It'll also use another $600,000 to buy Lot 8 of the Sheldon Jackson College campus property, which it will then give back to the city. The city can then use that land for a seawalk that would lead to the historical park. As it turns out, the deal sets aside more land than the city needs in order to make up for the airport project. Linda Spearstra with the Army Corps of Engineers says it's a good, proactive move.
You will have projects that will impact waters of the U.S. You will have to mitigate. It's bottom line. So being able to preserve that area for you as a mitigation bank, Area A, is really giving a lot of foresight to future projects.
At Tuesday night's assembly meeting, the discussion of the deal took about an hour. Assemblymember Terry Blake had some doubts, including the idea that the deal is for the indefinite future.
I just have a hard time saying that we are going to negotiate this property away with these type of restrictions and our exposure from any litigation in the future. And it's not just that piece. There's more here as well. And I think there's 15 pages of this.
Blake's concerns included the possibility that commercial fishing could be restricted in that area. The assembly changed the document to allow for commercial fishing. Other restrictions in the deal include dropping anchor on the tidelands and the use of motorized wheeled vehicles on the tide flats when they're exposed. Assemblymember Larry Cruz asked if the conservation status of the lands would also preclude people from walking out onto the flats.
In fact, on the contrary.
Diane Mayer is executive director of the Southeast Alaska Land Trust. She says part of the reason for setting the land aside in the first place is so that it can be used for educational or interpretive purposes. In other words, so people can access it, or so students can learn about it, for example, with programs from the nearby Sitka Sound Science Center.
Now, if the Science Center did it at such intensity that you were seeing trails carved through the eelgrass, we'd probably tell them to lighten up on their program and try to do more from the seawalk, but that's the purpose of setting it aside. It's an excellent educational facility.
Assemblymember Phyllis Hackett said the city has to find some land to set aside and that this area fits the bill nicely.
I could understand the concerns if we were talking about a piece of property in the channel or in an area where we possibly would want to do some future development. This piece of property, I believe, is pretty ideal for this situation. It adjoins the national park, which is going to be a national park forever.
The assembly approved the deal on a 5-2 vote, with Blake and Pete Esquiro opposing. The changes the assembly made will be taken back to the Land Trust Board for consideration, and then the document goes on to be reviewed by the Trust and numerous federal and state agencies, including the Army Corps of Engineers, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the National Marine Fisheries Service, and the State Department of Transportation. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Films like Into the Wild and Grizzly Man tend to be seen by many Alaskans as dark comedies. The first sight of someone walking carelessly into a frigid river or talking about the bears as friends send cynical shivers down the spine. It appears that the Discovery Channel's new show, Gold Rush Alaska, is mining the same vein of naive implausibility.
This is our biggest challenge to date. We've got a bridge that we don't know if it can handle the capacity. It's this old steel trestle with wood decking that's half rotten. Everything can go in the river. So this is a big deal for us right now.
Keep everybody off that bridge except for us. Let's go.
Ominous music, overactive sound effects, and voices filled with pseudo-urgency. This is the Klahini Bridge, which every resident of the Chilkat Valley knows carries heavy heating oil trucks and full tourist buses every summer day. What's going on here? The film crew seem to encourage the aura of possible confrontation. KHNS host Deborah Schnabel interviews longtime Chilkat Valley miner John Schnabel on Talk Around Town in mid-December.
Did you have a sense that the producers of the show wanted there to be antagonism?
Well, to be honest about it, they felt the show would be much more attractive if there was an element of antagonism. And they tried to bait me, I guess is the right word, into making statements that I felt that I resented their presence. Mm. And I refused to do so repeatedly, and I told them I would be happy to help them.
Steve Burrell, executive director of the Alaska Miners Association, said the group seemed to have a chip on its shoulder against the government and seemed to be looking for a confrontation. KHNS later spoke with Burrell, who remained skeptical of the careless image that was being promoted of mining in Alaska.
Historically, there have been lots and lots of people that have come to Alaska and dug holes in the ground and gone broke. And in modern mining, you do some exploration ahead of time. You design the layout of the pits, how you believe you're going to mine something. You go and get the permits to do it. I haven't seen any mention of the permit process. If someone packs up and comes to Alaska, say, in March or April and expects to be mining that summer, I'm sorry, they're going to be very disappointed because the permitting process is a minimum of a couple, 3 months.
Not only was an artificial sense of confrontation fostered for dramatic purposes, so was suspicion. Deborah Schnabel talks with John about an uncharacteristic use of binoculars.
Now, you were featured in the second episode. I saw you with a pair of binoculars looking across the river at the other camp, so to speak. I thought, well, that seems so uncharacteristic of my father to be, like, observing somebody through binoculars. Were you asked? Was something staged for you?
That's correct. I was handed the binoculars and told to look across, and I observed over there was several men standing over there with binoculars looking at us. So I said, well, we're doing something for the show.
The miners, Todd Hoffman and company, seem to have no basic understanding of either mining or safety, John Schnabel comments.
We can see that in the first episode when they crossed the river with a sort of a foolish approach. One guy could have lost his life walking around out in that current if he lost his footing.
Steve Burrell adds to the criticism of that river crossing scene.
I mean, I've had you know, guys that I know, construction workers, say, what in the world was that about? They run equipment and say, why would someone be so stupid to try to cross that creek or the river channel the way they did? I mean, I don't have an answer for them, but I mean, that's exactly what long, long-term friend of mine from church said just Sunday.
Well, I see the big backhoe bash a little bit of the top of their four-wheeler, and I became somewhat amused.
What are you so scared of? You're only hanging on a four-wheeler over a rushing river.
Hey, Todd, you got to be really careful about dropping guys in the water there. That water is so cold, turn you purple in a half a second.
The team's excavator is stuck in freezing water as it tries to cross the rising Klahini River. Their hopes of gold could be sunk before they've even gotten to the claim.
There was no danger of a rising flood of water, nor did they even need to cross the river since they had already crossed it earlier by bridge. A caller to Talk Around Town points out another impossibility.
And also, just one more comment, that, you know, you catch a few inconsistencies in there, like it looks like their cell phones for some reason work perfectly well up at the field.
Isn't that interesting?
it really makes you wonder why our cell phones don't work there.
Right, well...
Steve Burrell of the Alaska Miners Association compares the life of real miners with the unreality portrayed in Gold Rush, Alaska.
And yeah, there's a great story there, but the people that are making a living, this isn't the way they operate. You know, they're not out there. I mean, they might have a firearm on the property, but they're not. Everybody's not carrying guns around and scared to death of bears. And I mean, this bad portrayal of what it's like being in the woods.
If there is one lesson to be gleaned from Gold Rush, Alaska, it's that in order to be accurate, it probably should be called an unreality show. This is Burn Power for KHNS News. Tara Bicknell returns in January.